is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg, and with me and the other line, as always, David Ramil. How you doing?
Doing pretty good, considering another loss, but another opportunity to look to the future, which is named Showtime Willie Reed.
Yeah, Willie Reed, 22 points, 18 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, 2 blocks, a plus 6 in the game. And let's just start with his impressive night. I think that the Heat overall struggled in the paint. They got outscored by 12 points in the paint. Suns had 46 points. Miami had 34 in the Heat's losing end to a 99-90 loss to the Phoenix Suns tonight.
Yeah.
But Reed, despite that points in the paint advantage for Phoenix, Willie Reed was still a plus 6. He had the highest plus minus out of anybody in the starting unit. So, you know, this, in other words, these weren't really empty numbers, even though it came in a loss.
I don't know if they're not or empty or not, to be honest with you, because it's just so hard to measure or quantify the impact of any one player, considering, you know, the number of injuries and everything else. Like, somebody had to score. And right now, our starting lineup tonight included Dragic, Reed, Rodney McGruder, Luke Babbitt, and Josh Richardson. Richardson was having one of those nights where he wasn't able to score as much as or as well as he had in previous games. So it was a pretty tough outing for him. And Reed was, you know, to his benefit, he was able to really make the most of this opportunity. With Whiteside out, he looked particularly strong. We never expected that kind of a showing from him, but 11 of 16 shooting, that's you know, nothing to sneer at. And again, to grab 18 boards. Now, there were a lot of rebounding opportunities considering Miami as a team shot. What was it? 39%. So, yeah, not particularly good. 26% from three-point range, 6 of 23 overall. So there were quite a few rebounding opportunities, and Reed certainly did a good job of corralling those. But
he got
eight offensive
rebounds.
Yeah.
And for the Suns, I mean, they shot 47% in the game. So to grab 8 offensive rebounds, a game high, I loved that. And a lot of those points came against Tyson Chandler. I thought that, you know, one of the things Willie Reed does really well is he just kind of finds openings in the defense. Like, he's not DeAndre Jordan. He's not going to just jump over the defense and catch a lob and slam it home. He's more of a feel guy. Like, he almost doesn't play his size in that way, because he kind of, like, creeps along the baseline and just get open for, like, a nice Goran Dragic dump off, who also had a great game. We'll talk about him in a little bit. So I thought Dragic's good game really benefited Willie Reed, and I thought those two had something going.
Yeah, no free throws, though. That's weird, right? I mean, not even a free throw attempt. So clearly he was avoiding contact there. I think Tyson Chandler, I think at this point in his career, is more of a, you know, just seeking a block here. You know, that's been the case for many of his seasons here in the NBA, but in particular, just not really engaging in any kind of you know, physical contact there. But yeah, I mean, a good showing overall for Reed.
I thought it was interesting because I did that profile on Willie Reed for the Miami Heat tip-off mag.
Right.
And in his interview, he actually mentioned Tyson Chandler as like a player role model, specifically the year that Tyson Chandler won Defensive Player of the Year in New York. Was it 2012, I think, off the top of my head? I could be wrong. But he said Tyson Chandler and DeAndre Jordan were both guys who he looks up to as player role models, the way that they're able to roll to the rim really hard, set really great screens along the perimeter, obviously play great defense. And I think he tries to mimic that in a lot of how he plays. All right, Goran Dragic also had a great game. Like we said, 24 points on 9 of 18 shooting, 9 assists, 2 steals. A really good game. Most of those points coming in the first half. And when I say most of those points, 22 of those 24 points. So not as great as the second half for Goran Dragic. It was really, for the Heat, a tale of two halves all night, and that was really embodied by Dragic's game.
Yeah, it kind of seemed like a combination of him kind of taking the foot off the gas a little bit and Phoenix keying their defense more to stopping him. Because in reality, aside from Dragic and Reed, there wasn't much scoring coming from anybody in the Heat's rotation. So they could afford to you know, defend Dragic a little bit better and let Reed get those points in the second half. I imagine that probably Reed got most of his points in the second half the same way that Dragic got most of his points in the first half, although I don't have that exactly in front of me. But
just
still,
the difference of like a dump off here as opposed to Dragic putting it up to the rim.
Exactly.
He did pick up 5 fouls in the game, and a few of those came pretty early. I wonder how much of that had to do with his aggressiveness in the second half.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, some of those seem particularly ticky tack there, and you know, he played in Phoenix. Obviously, I think there certainly is a need to enact a little bit of revenge or kind of show them a little bit of what they're missing there. But you know, unfortunately, those fouls seem to limit him in the second half. But a strong showing from him. You know, one of two from 3-point range, 5 of 6 from the free throw line. So he was getting some calls, and then, you know, some calls going against him as well. 9 of 18 overall, but just, you know, visibly not as aggressive in the second half there. And that's really what was the difference, I think, because, you know, Miami kept it close for the first half, and then all of a sudden in the third quarter, you could see Phoenix just pulling away. And then from that point on, it didn't seem like Miami had much left. I think the closest they came in the fourth quarter, as far as a lead is concerned, was maybe 8 points. And then Phoenix was able to stretch that lead out significantly, and they just closed the game out, you know, with a 9-point win that was much greater than the final score reveals.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a trend more recently for the Heat, is just one bad quarter sinking them completely. And you know, it was close by halftime in that third quarter, like you mentioned. I mean, 27-14. Mm. They're outscored 27-14 in the third quarter. That's really hard to come back from. And like, of all these injuries, you know, your number one or number two offensive, you know, threat on any given possession, Whiteside, is out in the game. And Willie Reed, granted, he had a great game. There's just too much going on. There's too much adversity for the Heat to have just such a bad quarter. And it might be just easy to dismiss Miami's problems. Or they get outscored in one quarter. It's, of course they do. They don't have a good team. You just talked about all the injuries and everything like that. Yeah. But they were clearly able to keep it a game with Phoenix in the first and second quarter. And really the fourth quarter that they ended up winning, a lot of that was probably garbage time, but you know, that first half, they showed that they were right there with Phoenix, and they just let it slip away. And the Suns, by the way, they had the same record, basically, as Miami going into this game. They were 11-25. Miami was 10-26, you know, after this game. So this is not, like, it's not like they almost beat the Warriors or the Spurs. Like, this was another bad team on the second night of a back-to-back that they lost to, you know, all the injuries and everything included. It's still a little... You know, it's one of those things, like, they've got to be able to fix these quarters. And it's not just one quarter. It seems to be a different quarter every night.
I saw a Phoenix-based blogger tweet out at some point, you know, what is Miami doing? I don't know if you caught that or not, but
I'm not sure I did.
Yeah. And I think he wasn't talking necessarily just about the game, but just the season in general. And, you know, nights like this, it's particularly hard to see what Miami's building towards. And I don't think this reveals the picture. And it worries me a little bit because – you know, I think, you know, we're looking forward towards the future. You know, we're acquiring free agents, drafting well, et cetera. But showings like this, I mean, this is not the Miami team that you're used to seeing. And if you, when you travel around the country or go on West Coast road trips like this, and you start to see this ramshackle roster kind of, you know, falling out there and not necessarily performing at a high level, does the reputation that Miami has so carefully crafted over the last 20 years start to take a noticeable hit? I mean, you know, do people start to see this franchise less and less, you know, with the kind of sheer gleam that they've seen them with in the past few years, you know, particularly with the absence of Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade and the negativity that came about from that situation? It scares me a little bit to think that Miami is being viewed more and more as of not necessarily the destination franchise that you and I expect it to be.
I mean, that question, what is Miami doing? There's no identity to this team anymore. And, you know, extenuating circumstances applied, obviously, but
absolutely,
there is no identity to this team. And, you know, I've spoken about it before, but you look at what the Boston Celtics have done, and they had no business signing Al Horford this summer. They didn't. Like, they had an undersized, you know, borderline all-star level point guard. The only reason Isaiah Thomas made it was because he played in the East last year.
Right.
Good player, don't get me wrong. Scored 52 points against the Heat, obviously. but as a team, they had no business signing Al Horford, but it was really just that whole, you know, they played small, they played fast, they had assets, they had young guys.
You could see what the plan was. Like, okay, I could join this team and I know that I'm not going to be the best player on this team possibly in a year or two. Like, there might be another all-star here with me at some point. That, you know, if you're Al Horford and you're thinking that. Brad Stevens, obviously, I mean, this team had an identity, it had a plan. And I wonder if the Heat would be better off going in that direction.
Even if it's, you know, we call it tanking, call it asset building, whatever you want, but it might be a better situation for them as opposed to putting all your chips on the white side. You know, what was the chips in the basket? What was that phrase that we were using for a while?
The dominoes in the basket.
You don't want to put all the white side dominoes in the basket, but it's been too long since we brought that. But
that was when we had a shred of optimism at the start of the season, I think.
All the dominoes are gone. I don't even know where my baskets are anymore.
It's torn to shreds.
Just on the floor, right under my TV.
We miss Deion Waiters, I think. That's clearly what it is, right? We need him back.
Can we talk about Deion Waiters for a second? Because
absolutely. When can't we talk about Deion Waiters?
Good point. When our listeners, our loyal listeners, start complaining about it. But we haven't talked about him for a while. This team could really use a guy maybe like Deion Waiters right now. And nobody's really said that, but they could really use a guy like Deion Waiters right now with all of his injuries.
Yeah, he needs to go out there, you know, not giving one, you know, what, and just going out there and looking for a shot. And some nights it's going to fall and some nights it's not going to. But they could certainly use somebody who's not going to get hung up in the past or look too down on himself. He's going to keep shooting, and he's perfect. I mean, he's the kind of gunner that this season desperately needs, and games like tonight in particular.
I mean, we talk about the game. We didn't even mention the injuries. James Johnson out. Josh McRoberts out. Justice Winslow out. Whiteside, we said, out. Tyler Johnson out. Deion Waiters obviously was out. Chris Bosh clearly not playing. I mean, there's so much of the roster gone. You're looking at a starting unit of Goran Dragic, Josh Richardson, Rodney Magruder, Luke Babbitt, and Willie Reed. I mean, this is, it's quite jarring when you look at what the starting lineup is. And, you know, I think you and I have talked about this. They're probably being really, really careful with these injuries.
Well, James Johnson sat out due to food poisoning. I didn't see what that was all about. I'm hoping he'll feel better before he goes to Sacramento tomorrow, but I mean that's still a little unusual. I didn't see anything about that.
You don't eat sushi in Arizona, like James.
Especially
Johnson.
Not from the airport anymore, or a gas station on the way to the arena.
Have you been to Arizona?
No, I haven't. No,
I went once, and I was where was I in Arizona? I don't even remember. Was it Tucson? And we went into a bar. And there was like this like kind of old style, old timey like road, you know, with like saloons and stuff like that. Because I guess it's a desert, whatever. And I was like, all right, let's do it. Walk in and cheapest drinks ever. I think we like bought a round of beers for six people for like $3. It was insane. And so great. Like, let's just stay here. And we did. And I just remember getting really, really drunk and a horse with a guy playing a guitar on riding this horse. Walking into the bar and playing guitar, playing like a little concert on the horse for a while. And then I went outside and passed out on a bench because I wasn't sure what I was seeing at this point, what they put in the beer. And so that's my experience in Arizona. I imagine that's probably what happened to James Johnson and why he's out with quote-unquote food poisoning. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
No, it's a good one, and you're kind of selling it. And you know, I don't want to go. I don't want to have to move to Arizona, but I definitely want to go check it out now that you
beer prices.
Nothing else, to see guitarists on horses. I think that sounds like a really big plus for me. That's what I look for whenever I go in a tourist destination.
Where are your guitars and horses?
Preferably together.
Right. I'm out of here. All right, so any other notes? Udonis Haslam played 16 minutes in the game. Nice to see him play. I mean, he didn't play necessarily well, but
I don't know if you were catching the Suns broadcast or not. That's what I had on my League Pass feed. And at one point he had that one, I think the one basket he scored where he got the and one, and he finished the layup in traffic, got fouled, and fell down to the ground. Eddie Johnson, the Suns broadcaster, former NBA player himself, said, you know, he noticed how everybody ran over to go pick up UD when he fell to the floor because, quote unquote, he doesn't have many falls left. So I guess that was kind of a knock on Haslam scoring or an age rather. But it seems apparent. But, you know, Spoelstra needed a big body to go in there and go up against Alex Len and occasionally against Tyson Chandler. So that's why he got his minutes. There's nobody else left to put in there, to be honest with you, with McRoberts out and James Johnson out. So that's how Haslam's going to get his minutes at this point.
Absolutely. And so on our mailbag, we were asked, what about Derek Williams? With McRoberts out, is he going to get more of an opportunity? He got his opportunity tonight. He didn't start, but he played more minutes than Luke Babbitt, who did get the start at power forward. Luke Babbitt played 23 minutes. Derek Williams played 24. But he was 0 for 7, missed his only three-pointer in the game, finished with just 3 points. Those were all from the free throw line. Tough night for Derek Williams. I mean,
what else can you say? I mean, you know, you'd think, if anything, he'd be inspired to be playing in the state where he had such a successful college career. Yeah. But clearly that wasn't the case.
He's grasping for straws at this point.
Yeah, like, I mean,
when are you going to play better? I don't know.
He just looked really rough out there. You know, he has this ability to spin past the initial defender, but usually that leads him to another rim protector. You know, so he gets past the perimeter defender using a great spin move, and all of a sudden he finds himself going up against Chandler or Len and getting his block, you know, his shot blocked. So it's just not finishing at the rim at a high percentage at this point, and his jumper clearly isn't there either. So I just don't know how he's getting his points. And maybe it would help if there was more spacing to pull away a defender or something along those lines. But Miami's roster just isn't equipped for that, and I don't think getting Derek Williams the points is a big priority at this point in the season.
Luke Babbitt, who did get the start there, also just a tough game. 3 of 11 from shooting. Just 7 points, a game low minus 16.
Yeah, but I'm not expecting anything from Babbitt at this point. Like I'm off the Babbitt train. I mean, I'm still hoping, clinging to like the slimmest of hopes that Derek Williams is going to be able to turn something out of this season. But Babbitt, I don't know.
What's annoying about him is that, you know, his key attribute, right, is 3-point shooting, and you've yet to see it this season. I mean, he's not proven to be a good 3-point shooter in the slightest, and it's not for a lack of playing time or opportunities. And he's not taking those 3-point shots, and I don't know if this is a lack of confidence because he has been making them, but he has a really annoying habit of just passing up what he should be taking, you know, a semi-open to open 3-pointer. And putting the ball on the floor and dribbling it straight into traffic. I mean, he doesn't have any lateral moves. I don't know if he knows how to dribble side to side. And he just dribbles straight forward 3 or 4 steps and finds himself in traffic and puts up an awkward floater. And he does this over and over again. And, you know, this is something, you know, you and I have noticed throughout the season. But the other thing I noticed this game was that he would do that and then not see open shooters. I think there was this one play where either Josh Richardson or Roddy Magruder was wide open for a 3-point shot after he pump faked a three, the defender bit, you know, and he put the ball on the floor and the help defender came, and that left Josh Richardson or Magruder, whichever one it was, wide open. And if you're, you know, a basketball player, you should be able to recognize that double team coming at you and know that your shooter to right to your left is wide open and take that and make that pass. That's the reason you pump fake and put the ball on the floor in the first place, really. It's not to get a contested mid-range shot. So, and he ended up taking a contested mid-range shot. And it's just like, so it's not only that, but I don't know if he's not a good passer. I don't know. Like, he really doesn't offer anything other than 3-point shooting, and he's not even doing that. So,
yeah.
Not great. Let's see. I don't know who else was. I mean, Roddy Magruder, typical, like, low shooting percentage, but positive on the plus-minus. Plus 3 in the game, 8 points on 3 of 10 shooting. I mean, the whole team just had a bad night, shooting less than 40% from the field compared to Phoenix shooting 46.8%. I mean, when the difference is that, we can get into points in the paint, rebounding, turnovers, everything, whatever. But if the difference is like that in shooting, they're just not going to win. So.
Yeah.
Any other notes before we hang this thing up?
Nope.
Great. Well, thank you. Thanks for listening. That's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get podcasts, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at Locked On Heat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's lockedonheat@gmail.com. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so and get the podcast automatically every day. And then do us a favor, go to iTunes and leave us a rating. It helps our position on the iTunes charts. It helps other people discover the show. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Hey again, Wes here. So one of the reasons our boss, David Locke, started the Locked On Podcast Network is because podcasts are hot. I mean, of course they are. You're listening to one right now. And if your company is looking to reach listeners as awesome as you are, you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Heat is listened to by 95% men, 74% of which are between the ages of 18 and 44. According to a recent study, podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with a sponsor than within any other media outlet. Plus, our rates are reasonable. Or you can decide that for yourself. Just email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com to find out more about sponsoring Locked On Heat and engaging the audience you want to reach.